Welcome everybody for an extremely exciting show that we have. We have Mike, co-founder of Zapier, on here. Mike, would love, I'm sure most of our listeners know what Zapier is, but would love to get from you an intro about yourself and in a few words what Zapier is and does and how it helps businesses and everything like that. And then I'll kind of tee up the listeners, because most of them listen at the beginning of the show. We do have a pretty big announcement that we wanted to share, which I guess, does that make us now we're a media outlet, I guess, or something like that? News. I don't know, but we're breaking news, but I'll turn it over breaking to you, the Mike. News.
I'm Mike Knoop, one of the co-founders of Zapier. If you're not familiar with Zapier, Zapier is a workflow automation platform. We have tens of millions of businesses all over the world that use Zapier to connect together the software tools and apps that they use to run and grow their businesses. So I always like to talk through sort of examples. So, you know, maybe a common popular thing might be whenever you get a new marketing lead from your website. Let's say you're using something like SurveyMonkey. You could automatically notify your team in Slack if that lead is a high value lead. Those are the types of things that you can use Zapier for. And of course, the magic of Zapier is we don't prescribe what you use the product for. There's 6,000 integrations and apps, and you can connect them in any way that you want. We've got a lot of use cases and ideas and content that you can kind of learn to use. Sort of what's possible and what other people are using Zapier for. It's primarily used by non-technical folks as well. I think that's the other kind of unique thing relative to a lot of other tools. It's, only maybe 4 out of 5 of our users would not self-describe as like a developer or an engineer. These are folks in sales ops, marketing, you know, support, product management, design, all these functions that are able to get a lot of leverage using Zapier in their sort of day-to-day work and what they use it for.
Yeah.
Over the last, I'd say, 2 years, I've been sort of all in on AI. That's probably the other like unique thing. I was Zapier's president for a handful of years up till 2021. And I was running all of our product engineering, and I gave it all up. Actually, I went back to being an IC. I went all in on AI about 2 years ago now, and gave up my exec team role. And it was sort of predicated on this progress of like GPT-2 to GPT-3. This was still pre-ChatGPT era. But I'd seen enough progress where I felt like, okay, if this language model technology really works, really going to radically change the landscape of how accessible things like workflow automation are. You know, we've reached tens of millions of businesses, but our mission at Zapier is to make automation work for everyone. We want as many people in the world to be able to sort of get the feeling and leverage of sort of software. And that's, in my mind, that starts at hundreds of millions. And this language model AI technology is the first stuff I've seen since we founded the company that I thought had a chance to do that. So that's been my sort of world and jam for the last 2 years now.
I'm really curious because most of our audience are first time venture backed founders, and you guys have kind of taken an alternative path as far as not going the I know you guys had a small round, but you were able to obviously build the business from the revenue of your customers. How did that happen? And I'm just really curious about how you were able to do this in the world of, you have SaaS companies that are competing, and I'm sure you guys have a lot of competitors and all that. How are you able to do that from the start?
Zapier is weird in like a few ways, I guess. Brian Wade and I are from Missouri. Like, we got started at a startup weekend, the very first startup weekend in Columbia, Missouri. And over the like years, you know, we started as a remote company. You know? So if I was trying to enumerate all the ways we're weird, like, you know, we started remote in 2012. So we've been fully remote. We've never had an office headquarters. We still have never had headquarters in an office, sort of way before it was cool. We, as you mentioned, only raised a small amount of money. Zapier went through Y Combinator in 2012, and we raised one small seed round effectively. After that, we never spent the money, actually. and we sort of really got profitable around 2014, a couple of years in, and we have grown the business off of revenue. We can talk about that if you're curious about sort of the dynamics there. And then I think the other, like, maybe less commonly known way where Weird is, you know, there's this kind of classic startup advice and trope that you should, you know, when you're starting your company, you should focus on like one really, really good use case, one something really deep, right? Go pick a niche and go really, really deep into it. And when we launched Zapier in 2012, we had built maybe 50 or 60 integrations, app integrations, between Brian Wade and myself, my co-founders. And so the number of use cases that Zapier supported was, you know, probably something like 100 squared. You know, we're talking like tens of thousands of use cases that Zapier was able to do on day one. And so Zapier is always this really wide, but somewhat shallow product. We had tons of use cases, but none of them were ones where, you know, necessarily a user's life is dramatically changing as sort of a result of, you know, adopting that one use case. Really, I think the magic of Zapier was they adopted the one use case and then they realized the sort of power and flexibility of like the rest of the platform. And that sort of was what compelled them to sort of buy and use for the long term. So anyway, there's a lot of weird stuff about Zapier. I tend to like to think of Zapier as a, honestly, a bit just like an existence proof of like some alternative ways to grow and run companies than sort of the classic Silicon Valley wisdom. Not to say that you can or shouldn't follow us. I just think it's important to know that there are like alternative stories out there of success. Because what I would actually recommend founders do is like make the best decision for yourself. Optimize for, are you growing? Are your customers happy? Are your team happy? Are you as like founder happy? You know, if you're like green across the board, then like just make the decision that sort of leads most likely to sort of that outcome. And that's what we did. We just never sort of assumed some set of sort of wisdom was like the right path. We just, every single decision we faced, we sort of reevaluated with just fresh eyes and made the right decision ahead of us. And that's what I'd actually advise. And, you know, I just think it's like, you know, if you're faced with two decisions and one is the like kind of a medic idea of how to run a company and one is like what you actually feel is the right decision, just, you know, I think know that there's alternative examples of success out there in the world that, you know, there's not just one way to build and grow successful companies.
How did you think about that decision in early days? You know, you clearly had product market fit, building something people wanted and actually paid for, profitable. I imagine every week you were getting these cold inbound emails from investors. How hard was it to stay on that path? And like, what made it possible for you?
We were not the cool kids. Like when we were going through YC, we were not the cool kids in the batch. Like no one knew who we were. Even the YC partners, like, you know, didn't really understand what Zapier did when we went to do demo day. I don't think anyone really understood what we did when we went to demo day. In fact, we rose our one round of funding the 2 weeks after YC. And we went and did the sort of pitch, you know, down Sand Hill Road or whatever, talked to 100 different firms. The only two who actually like institutional firms who said yes were actually ones that we had like gotten, who reached out to us like months ahead, like before YC. So it was, you know, I think it's easy to look backwards and say, oh yeah, I was like sort of preconceived that this thing was going to be really successful. But I don't even think Brian Wade and I knew how successful or big it could get when we first launched. There was always this moment in my mind of, you know, yeah, it seems to be working, but like when's the music going to stop? You know, when's the S curve start to hit? When does it start to tap out? When, you know, it felt too good to be true a little bit in some of the early days. And it just turned out like, I think we found a really big niche in the world and we're able to grow it.
Very cool.
Well, I know, you know, one of the things we really want to talk about is AI. And I don't think a lot of people really know how much Zapier has done with AI. Can you walk us through what it was like? What were the things that you felt when you first saw GPT-3 came out, and how did it evolve since then? What seemed to work? What didn't work? What didn't work until GPT-4 came out? We'd just love to hear the story.
I did a whole like company hangout we do it all hands every week. I did a whole one on GPT-3 for the whole company. It was one of the first times I really got like into it. And I think that the thing that tipped me over the edge to like literally give up my exec team and president role and go back to being an IC was the sort of chain of thought paper, the like, let's think step by step, came out, I think Jan 2021, if I remember right. Yeah. And this was a paper that shocked me because I had been playing with the models for 18 months up to that point. I felt like I had a good sense of what they could do. And then this like new technique of prompting got dropped on the world. And it turns out, oh, wow, these things actually have capabilities that are sort of latent in their model weights that no one knew about for over a year. And wasn't like well known. And that felt really surprising. And I was like, whenever I definitely very important to go investigate further. and get an understanding of like, well, are there other capabilities that are like latent here that no one's discovered yet that could put us on the path towards AGI? That's going to be really important for the world, but also just for Zapier as a business. So like, felt like I needed to know that. So that kind of was what catalyzed that in my head. Like, we got to go start investigating and playing and making these investments. And that, like I said, this was sort of pre-ChatGPT. Brian, my CTO and co-founder, him and I basically paired up for 6 months, and we just built every like prototype you can imagine. We had a prototype of like Tree of Thought. We had a prototype of Chain of Thought. We had a prototype of actually ChatGPT before it even launched. We built tool use with like the Toolformer paper. Like, we had a version of that internally. So we like work through the idea space with prompts, I think, really, really rapidly. And what we settled on initially, thinking, okay, there's sort of an opportunity for us to dip our toes into this world, was by equipping language models with tools. So this era was, you know, still model weights were frozen in time, you know, the moment they got trained, and they couldn't interact with the real world. And we felt like, okay, well, that's, Zapier could help there, because we have an integration library of 6,000 integrations, that those are sort of the bridges to the real world to do useful things that people want. That's what people in Zapier have been doing for the last 10 years, is, you know, the real world actions. Mm-hmm. And so we built this thing called AI Actions, which was an API that developers or builders could use to hook up their AI system, their AI products, to Zapier, to let their models and prompts reach out and like take action in the real world. And it originally was launched through the ChatGPT plugin back in, I think, like March 2022. And then later in that year, or 2023, and then later in the year with the sort of GPT store stuff. And that allowed us to start getting some insight into like what users were actually putting into these like natural language systems. And I think one of the most interesting things to me was how much these were like not the people that were normally coming to Zapier. These were actually like net new people that were like rediscovering discovering automation for the first time and trying out new things. You can see this on sort of our signup graphs, where it's like, yeah, we were getting a ton of like net new people coming to check this out. And that kind of reinforced my belief that, like, yeah, if we want to make automation work for everyone, we're going to have to lean into these types of technologies that like a radically different ease of use paradigm to them. You know, I just fundamentally don't believe that Zapier's current classic structured UI UX reaches hundreds of millions of users. Whereas I do fundamentally believe language model non-deterministic based systems can.
Who were these people? What made them different? You mentioned that Zapier's always been like non-technical.
They were just even less technical. So there's a woman at Zapier who I spent a lot of time with last summer. Her name's Carly. She was working on our comms team. She works on our community team. And we launched this like AI chatbot builder product early last year. It's a real simple wrapper, honestly, around GPT-3.5 Turbo and GPT-4. And I was actually wrong about it. I didn't think it was going to be very successful. And we launched it to allow sort of no coders, folks are, you know, our existing users, to be able to sort of build and customize chatbots and embed them on their website. And it was like the fastest growing new product we've ever launched. Really shocked me. And I was just totally wrong about how valuable it. That was, again, one of these like data points where it's like, okay, they're like, we're so early on the adoption curve for this stuff. Even the simple stuff still is like not well penetrated into the world. And Carly was our internal, like, most prolific chatbot builder. And she wasn't building them to put on our website. She was actually doing something different. She was building these bots to use for herself or give to her teammates. So she had one where you could like rewrite press releases in the style of Wade, our CEO. She built one that was helping managers give performance feedback to like against the Zapier values and the operating principles of the company. She had a lot of these like internal use cases, which we did not design that product for at all. So I was like, okay, that's cool. So like, I spent a ton of time with her, and I at some point when I was interviewing her, I asked her, like, Carly, you have so many of these bots you've built with this like Zapier chatbot product. I bet you have some like cool Zaps too. And walk me through some. And she said, you know, Micah, you'd be surprised. I actually don't have very many Zaps. I only have maybe one. It's a real simple Zap. And it's not for lack of ideas. Like, she spends time with our customers and our community all day long. So she gets inundated with just like cool ideas of what to use Zapier for. But she tried to go build it in the Zap editor, and she gets stuck. She'd run into a missing feature, or she'd run into, you know, a missing trigger or action, or she'd get confused about some like technical arcane setup configuration detail. And she'd, you know, reach out to somebody on the Zapier team. Got lots of people that are, you know, willing to help out around Zapier, but, you know, they weren't online. They didn't get back to her for 4 hours. And by the time they did, she sort of lost motivation on the use case and just never got it set up. And I think there are hundreds of millions of people in the world that are like Carly, that are able to use these like natural language based AI automation systems that just are, Zapier is just too hard for. And I sort of fundamentally think this is true, not for Zapier, but actually all no code like products out there. Anything that has like structured, it's like UI to structure is, and like then the structure is what the user is expected to work with. So whether it's like a UI structure or say like a, you know, an actual literal code, or maybe like a representation of code that's sort of rendered in the UI, like a canvas editor. I don't think any of these scale to hundreds of millions of users because there's too high of a learning curve up front before you start to be able to like tweak and build with the system. Right? Like I could draw an analogy between building Zaps and writing code, which is when you build a Zap similar to writing code, you have to get all the setup details exactly right. You got to get the, you know, you got to get the configuration exactly right before you can even turn the Zap on. And if you get it wrong, by the way, the Zap doesn't turn on, won't work. In the same way, when you're writing code, you got to get your entire program written syntax like correctly. You have to use the right, you know, key function names. You got to get the right syntax. And if you get any small bit wrong, the code will like not compile, or you'll get, you know, a syntax error when it runs. So there's this huge learning curve before you even get your first feedback moment of like contact with reality, which every developer knows about this, like dev, you know, test tweak loop. We see this on Zapier too. We see this with bots, but bots and these like AI natural language systems, one of the main reasons they're like unique and special is they work out of the box. There's no learning curve for them. The learning curve is zero. You tell them hello, they say hello back. And then you can start steering them gradually towards what you want them to do entirely through natural language. You can tell them to say, okay, hey, well, whenever, you know, can you watch monitor my Slack? And whenever I bookmark a post, I want you to, you know, do something. And they can work with that information. And I think that's what's really special and why this paradigm, like, I believe, sort of fundamentally this AI like natural language paradigm reaches the, you know, hundreds of millions of users.
So I think
so what'd you do about it, Mike? How like how are you going to solve that problem? I mean, Zapier seems like the perfect place to do to play around with natural language.
So we've sort of buried the news enough, I guess. So today Zapier is announcing brand new product. It's called Zapier Central. This is going to be the new home for these AI automation bots. It's basically a ground up reimagining of what automation looks like within sort of the age and era of AI. It's a natural language interface by default. And you can steer these bots, like I kind of was alluding to before, entirely through natural language. So you give them instructions through natural language, you equip them with tools, you equip them with, you know, the triggers that you care about, you equip them with the actions on Zapier that you care about. And unlike almost every other AI product that is sort of in the world today, these are truly autonomous bots. These are actually bots that can do work for you even when you're away from your desk, even when Zapier or Zapier Central is closed, even when you're out getting a coffee, even when you're in the field. These are bots that can react, monitor and react and proactively do things that you tell them to through natural language, even when you're sort of AFK is the one. I'm old, so I use. So we're launching it today. It's going to be a public preview. So if you have a Zapier account, you can sign in and use it. You can go to central.zapier.com to log in and try it out. If you don't have a Zapier account, you can also sign up for a free Zapier account and use Central as well. And we are excited to build together with our community on this stuff. We know it's early. We can talk about sort of some of the product itself. This is our first sort of big step, I think, into this future of AI automation. I'm just 100% convicted that like the future of automation is these AI systems doing work for us. And we know that's where the world is headed. And this is our first step towards that future.
Wow.
Can you walk us through how you build one of these and what are some really interesting early use cases that you've seen from your customers?
I wish I like do a screen share or something. I wasn't prepared for that.
You can actually. We'll add it in post.
Yeah.
I feel like
so much better than Tell for some of this stuff. But anyway, I think my sort of best voiceover job of building one of these things.
Please do.
But yeah, building an AI bot in Central, you know, when you first log in, it looks like a chat, and you can equip them basically with two sort of main things you can equip these AI bots with. You can equip them with behaviors and you could equip them with knowledge. Knowledge is third-party data through Zapier, so you can connect together apps on Zapier or data on through third-party apps. You can equip these bots with that knowledge. We're launching with Google Sheets, Google Docs, Notion. And yep. Behaviors are these things where you want the bot to do something on your behalf, right? So typically, classically, behavior is going to say, hey, I want this bot, you can describe the natural language, say, hey, I want the bot to sort of monitor or watch for this sort of event to happen in this app that I use for my work. And I wanted to do something else in this other app. You can chain apps actions together. You know, you can say, hey, first I want you to, I can give you a use case. I built one where we've Slack at Zapier, and I built a bot that would trigger, this behavior would trigger whenever I saved a post in Slack. And I was saving all of these Slack posts to a Google Sheet so that I could talk with the bot to have it summarize the Slack posts that I saved and match the content against our internal build operating principles for our engineering and product organization.
Wow.
So that I could give better, higher quality, like performance review feedback to our team when sort of performance review cycles came around. And so the way all these actions kind of set up on the behavior side is like automatically adding to a sheet, being able to retrieve from the sheet, and then being able to use sort of the built-in natural language abilities to do the sort of semantic lookups and inside Google Sheet and those concepts together and ultimately generate really good summaries.
I think we've held the teaser from the announcement that we wanted to make, and it involves a very important host this podcast, Andy or Mike, if you kind of want to go to what the announcement, not only obviously Central is the announcement that you guys are making today, but also how Andy is involved in this. So
Andy, I'll let you do it. I've been talking.
Well, I'll say it like this, Mike. How did we build Central? I mean, is the best way to describe.
Oh, what does that mean, Andy?
What?
So at Val, we had this vision. We had this vision that we could grab all the information from communication. We could transcribe it. We could make it searchable. And then we powered all the integrations on top of Zapier. We embedded the platform. We were always focused on basically building this co-pilot for your company, the triggers and actions. And really what we were thinking about was an agentic future. How do we build these smart agents? How do we build bots? And I guess sometime last year, I got connected to Wade. Wade's Mike's co-founder. And Wade and I had a conversation. We talked about my vision for Vowel. And I think there was an email exchange that said between Wade's vision, what they wanted to build and what I wanted to build. And the email went something like, we are so aligned. And then I was introduced to Mike. And we kept having these conversations about what we thought the future of a product should look like. And then Zapier acquired Val, and I became part of the team working with Mike. And that's what we're announcing today also.
Whoa, breaking news.
Breaking news. Congrats, Andy, and also Mike.
It's been fun working with you over the last 6 months, Andy.
Yeah, I am, for the record,
Mike's my boss.
I am, for the record, actually hearing about this for the first time for realsies. This is not a
and hopefully
reaction.
Everybody Andy, else. Andy, hopefully, Andy, hopefully, and we're going to be the ones that are breaking the news, recording this today, and you guys are announcing Central, but also in conjunction with the acquisition of Val and Andy and everything. And all, for all of our listeners out there, I don't think that you can disagree on how passionate Andy has been with AI and like building basically a Zoom powered by AI that's able to summarize your entire conversation and have actual action items and all of that. I was an early user of Val and it was awesome. And I'm really excited to see what Andy and the Val team that's going over to Zapier is able to produce. I personally think that there's a lot of companies out there that are just kind of doing AI for the sake of AI. But to me, this makes so much sense. Andy's been at this for so many different years. So I'm so excited to see you guys be able to team up. There's a lot of other AI stuff. It's just kind of like, in my opinion, vaporware. I'm definitely an AI skeptic for the majority of it, but this makes so much sense. I couldn't be more happy for you guys to partner up and take Zapier to the next level in this AI revolution.
Well, I guess I'm the first host of this podcast who's no longer a founder. So that's a fun part. But number two, why are we doing this? And why are we announcing this today? Well, we're announcing this today so that you all can go to central.zapier.com and try our product. Because Mike and I have been spending a lot of time together. We've gotten to know each other. We've been building this product, but it live or dies without our user feedback. And so we're really, really excited today to see what you do with Central. And as Mike said, it's a tech preview. This is, we think about this as like inning zero, basically, today. Right, Mike?
We, 100%. I kind of really resonate with what you're saying, Kevin, around like, I don't know that there's enough focus from just like the world right now on like, what are the use cases for language models and AI?
Yeah.
Last summer, I got really obsessed with that question, actually, because everyone was asking me about it. Like, what are you guys seeing? And I went and I've dug into our data bunch now. And to date, Zapier has automated about 50 million, a little over 50 million AI tasks. So these are tasks that are not like, these are truly hands-off keyboard, autonomous tasks. These are like Zapier is using an AI system to do something for the user entirely on their behalf. And there's a lot of really, really cool use cases buried in that. I think I started by trying to get a sense of what we were using it for internally. One of the biggest use cases I found was we have this idea on our website of these things called templates, where we publish use case ideas and inspiration for our customers on like what to use Zapier for. And these templates are actually quite like tricky and time consuming to build. They kind of use both the left half of your brain and the right half, because you got to get creative and think about like, what's the inspiring way to write, talk about the use case. But then you also have to like write code in JSON and like structure to build the template. And so the rate of production for these things was maybe like 10 a day for like a really good, you know, person. And we had a whole of a million of these templates that we wanted to build that we hadn't been able to build yet, because we just like the rate of production was so low. We launched two new integrations a day. So it's like we were just in the hole, and the hole was getting bigger. And last year we started applying language models and AI automation with Zapier to that problem. And we were able to get the rate of production up from 10 a day to 1,000 a day. And the way we did it was by moving humans from the do loop to a review loop, and got sort of the AI system to do the initial crafting of use case inspiration and structure, and dumped it out in a spreadsheet effectively, and had our sort of humans then reviewing the data that was in that spreadsheet and saying, okay, is that a good or bad one? It's just so much easier and faster to review. You don't even have to fix it if it's wrong. You just say like, just ignore it, you know, and only look at the ones that are really good and work. And I think I have like a half dozen more stories I can tell you just like that from inside Zapier. But I do think that there is a lot of actual real world value getting created right now around productivity and automation that is like not well known. And I guess maybe Andy, I'd be curious, you know, what have you seen so far in building this stuff? You've been spending a lot of time with our early customers with Central and our AI bot and other AI products. What are you hearing? What's like resonating? What are people finding useful? What are they actually trying? What do you see people adopting?
Well, I think the first way people start to adopt any of these tools, anything new looks like fun. It looks like an experiment. So people generally try it out. What do they try it out with? Low-risk use cases. And these low-risk use cases look like, everyone always wants to know what's on their calendar on a daily basis. That's like the number one, summarize my calendar to me. The easiest thing to understand the value of AI. But really, what are you powering and what are our customers want? On-market customers have all these use cases they think about where they have custom SOPs. These SOPs live in a Google Sheet or they live in a Google Doc. And they want people internally, ops, CSM, marketing, et cetera, to be able to ask a question and then to be able to power actions. And that's where Zapier has this incredible advantage. We have 6,500, more than 6,500 integrations today. And Central has that live on day one. Number two, we're already processing 2.5 billion tasks per month. That's a crazy amount of tasks. And so when I hear customers, the number one, these use cases are always, I want to score leads automatically. and I want to use some kind of custom knowledge source to do that. I mean, like, who here, Kevin, Siki, you both run enterprise companies. Don't you want to know when the lead comes in, is it important or not? And then automatically draft an email to them?
I mean, let me tell you something. So when I heard that Zapier does 50 million AI tasks, I was thinking 2 million of them is for me.
Very well, maybe. I spent
a while. I think about 2 years ago, I put together when OpenAI actually came out, a lead comes into runway.com. It goes through Clearbit, and this is all through Zapier. And then we'll pass it to OpenAI, and I have a 5-paragraph block prompt to qualify this lead, saying yes or no. And if it's leads qualified, it goes to Slack. And then once it goes to Slack, it also drafts an email that gets into my drafts folder on Gmail. And this actually saved a full-time headcount for us.
Amazing. Right.
So that's already happened. But it took a while. You know, it's like the editor is not the fastest and most easy to use thing in the world.
Do you remember exactly how long it took you to build that? Like how many was it days? Did you have to tweak it? Was it like?
I want to say end to end, in terms of hours, it was probably like 20. Most of it was just tweaking the prompt, though, I want to say. But end to end, probably 20.
Yeah. And I bet we can rebuild that in probably about 10 minutes, 20 minutes, the new AI bots and stuff.
Wild.
Because you just get a lot.
And then we're going to put...
You get a lot of what you were trying had to like do. You get it for free out of the box where you don't have to build the structure. You don't have to like go figure out the settings. You don't have to like do as much prompt management. You get a lot of it just for free built into the system now.
It's incredible. I think the impact of what you've created here, the picture in my head, I think like we're talking about agents and bots, but... I mean, you probably already know this, but this is one of the first big steps to everyone now has a free employee. And this is an autist level junior intern who also has superhuman capabilities and tool usage.
Right.
Like this is where it's going. And the economic value of that is like explosive and immeasurable. So I'm very excited.
Well, it's so funny you just said intern because like Mike and I have been tossing around this concept for at least a couple of months. Like, are there higher level of intelligent agents as the models get better and better? And I mean, we're talking about right now autonomous agents, or autonomous bots. But what we're failing to really realize is the biggest superpower I see coming out of this is human in the loop. And these are teeing up the workflow for an augmented intelligence workflow. So somebody on your team automatically finds out that there could be that a customer is reaching the chatbot on the site. They want a refund. Well, our agent can get to a place where it can prompt you to give a refund, but you're not going to trust an agent out of the box to do that. So now you've taken your CSM type workflow or your support type workflow, and you can make them almost superhumans. They can get 10 times more work done in a week. And if you're a VSMB or an SMB, this is such a paradigm shift. It unlocks so much. It unlocks so much productivity for you. I think it's really cool.
I think that also, like, so we've had Aaron Levy on the podcast. We've had a number of other amazing guests, and like the biggest thing that I see here is like people don't give a shit what like technology that you're using. All they really care about is like how you're solving their actual problems. And this is like a real way that you're able to automate, and Zapier has done this from the beginning as far as all the connections, pushing things over. And in your example, Mike, on the Slack side of things, like customers don't care like what technology you're using. I think that's where a lot of founders get really caught up, as far as like we should be like, we're going to build over this new technology. But at the end of the day, it's all about the customer. And I could also think, so I'm going to plug my company again, Airhouse. We have today humans that, not so many, we're actually very efficient, and we have an amazing company. And also we're closing around if anybody wants to invest in it. And we're
shameless plug for your own company please, of course, somebody reach out to Kevin and invest in his company.
Yeah, we have a little bit of allocation left, but the ability, as you continue to thinking about scaling, so like in our industry, in the fulfillment industry, it typically is like it there's just so many emails that go back and forth, and we could automate as much as we can. We build into the warehouse management systems, and they definitely are not that sophisticated. I think the future is doing a lot of more of this stuff. So I could see this is not just like in this use case what you guys are doing, Mike, and now Andy. It's not just creating this new technology for the sake of just using it, but it really solves real use cases. It, again, like Siki's point, like eliminates a full-time employee. With us, as quickly as we're scaling, it can enable us to reduce our ops, like entire team, by potentially 50%, which is massive not only scale, but also increase our gross margins and all of those different things. And that's why I have been, I'm definitely on like the Aaron Levy side of things. I was a huge crypto skeptic because I didn't really understand how the blockchain solved anything. But like here, like this is a real use case, and you're not just using a certain technology because it's cool and whatever, but you're solving real customers' problems. And the proof is in the pudding. Like as Mike said, how many millions of already AI pieces that you guys are automating, and that is really the future. But it needs to be that you need to use the right tool for the right job.
Well, the beauty of this is we're not announcing announcing one tool. We're announcing a platform. That's what we're doing. It's horizontal. So it really, for us, it's going to be so interesting to hear the use cases that what you're going to build.
Yeah.
And I think everyone knows automation has always been really hard. And I think also everyone can sit there and say the future of automation is AI automation. And that's what Central gives you. And yeah, today it's a tech preview, but Mike and I are very convinced that this is the future. And
it is the future.
There's no question about it. And so it's like, what internal process are you going to set up? What action are you going to trigger? And how are you going to do that with AI? And our hope and our bet is you do that on Zapier and on Central. And that's why when Mike told me about what he wanted to build, I decided to join forces with him.
You know, my mind is kind of racing here because when... Early on a runway, we started around the time GPT-3 came out, and
I told the team, we were like 10 people, my wish is, my dream is for Runway to never be more than 100 people, because the timing is perfect. Like, instead of scaling headcount, you can scale with the increasing leverage that improving AI technology gives each employee. And it strikes me that this is a step towards that world, and you can create more Zapiers, where you have 10 people and you have an incredibly valuable company. More Zapiers to come. Zapier type of companies.
I was like just bootstrap. Joking. Like that internally they call them Zaps. So it was just.
I'm wondering, Mike, is that?
I think that's the right
how
way
you think about this.
That's how I would frame sort of the future of AI automation. I think it's labor enhancement. I think is what we're going to see near term. I actually don't think that the current technology maturity is enough to do labor replacement, except in some like narrow corner cases. I actually think the current like generation of the technology from a capability standpoint is going to be more about cases where you are enhancing existing labor to do more, increase the rate of production for something that's really meaningful for the business. And now I think, and that will like add sort of system that like wide dampers on headcount growth, because you'll be able to do more with the same people that you have, right? Those same individuals, that human capital is going to get accelerated and enhanced further. So I do think you will see smaller teams getting more done and having higher impact, you know, the sort of Instagram story, right? Where, you know, they got acquired for tons of money for, you know, small team thing with WhatsApp. I think you're going to see just more and more of that kind of stuff happening. That's actually pretty true of what we see happening internally with Zapier. I think Zapier is probably maybe one of the like leading AI adopters. Over 50% of the company at the individual level uses AI daily through Zapier's automation.
Right.
Very high confidence in that stat, because I can look at the platform usage data. To get a little bit spicier,
I hear a lot of people talk about AI as like, this is going to increase leverage. It's going to make people more creative, more productive, which is 100% true. My question is, will it churn at some point, and when do you think it will turn, and what will happen when it turns? Like,
we need capability increases for that to happen, is my belief. I don't actually think current sort of capability from transformer models gets us there. The things that I expect to scale going forward into the future are things like context window, tokens per second, cost per million tokens. I think there are scaling laws in place. I don't think we're anywhere close to sort of the cap on those key dimensions that allow people to build like useful applications. There is constraint though on the general intelligence built into the current architectures, is my sort of belief. And it doesn't matter what architecture you pick. You could pick transformers, you could pick, you know, RNNs, you could pick LSTMs, you could pick, you know, these new state space models. They all have the same sort of empirical limits around their general intelligence ability. And that fact alone is why a lot of these systems, in order to be deployed into like high volume, high production customer facing stuff, are going to be very cautious, and it's going to require more human in the loop still for a lot of the review, like Zapier was doing. It got to our, you know, 100x sort of rate of labor enhancement. I'm not predicting a capability increase. I actually think that is a very interesting problem to work on. In fact, but that is an unpredictable thing, because that's going to be like a step function change in a discovery, as opposed to like a smooth scaling law. I hope and I think that it can happen, because I do think generally like the future will be better if we're able to actually scale intelligence, general level human intelligence. But I don't like, it's very unpredictable because of just the fact that it requires a discontinuous jump. It's not a smooth scaling log from what we have today.
I'd love to end, and I know that everybody's time here is valuable, and we have about 5 minutes left here. Mike, I'd love to get either some learnings that you can give to first-time founders, or actually I would be more wanting to hear some of the war stories about building Zapier and all of those different things when you guys obviously raised a little bit of money, and I'm sure that it was really difficult to build a big company. But do you have any war stories or any advice for founders looking to build companies like Zapier?
I think the path chooses you more than you choose the path. In a lot of cases, I think that was true for a lot of things with Zapier. You know, if I could go back in time, sure, there's probably things I might tweak about the business, but I'm pretty happy with the outcome. Let's be very clear. So, you know, probably the main things that I might try to tweak would be just things that go faster. Like in the early days, we, you know, kind of slowly approached the initial launch. And even post YC, right, we were pretty timid and sort of starting to hire and scale. And those are things with hindsight, I think you'd say, well, shoot, get there faster, right? And I think we probably could have carved off 2-3 years of like the timeline of the company had we done that. I think I have lots of scaling learnings that apply later on post product market fit. One of the ones that I actually think is hardest for companies is going from 1 to 2. That's been sort of the thing I focused most on over the last, call it 4 or 5 years at Zapier.
Mm.
It's been Zapier, if you go look at our homepage as of 2 years, 3 years ago, we sold one product, Zaps. That's it. And I think if you go look at the software companies that have made decade over decade progress towards their mission and compare them with companies that didn't, what you see is expansion over time. You see them being able to invest in new products, new services, new things over time. And I recognize that about half a decade ago. So we've been really investing in new products lately. We've launched Transfer, we launched Interfaces, we've launched Tables, we've launched Central. You should expect more from us. But I think that's it's actually harder to get a company to go from 1 to 2 than it is to go from 0 to 1 in some regards. I think once you go from 1 to 2 and you paint the picture for how people, how it looks and how it works, it's easier for it to go to 2 to 3.
When you think about making Zapier work, going from 0 to 1, you mentioned going fast, and there's many companies that go fast and very few companies that are Zapier. What do you think are the things that you got uniquely right?
We focused on distribution from day zero. We built our app directory before we had a working product. I think just not enough founders think about like how they can acquire customers in the early days. Our app directory is like one of the, you know, in a weird way, Zapier could be just looked at as a business model innovation, right? Because majority of integrations on Zapier are built by our partners for free. Those pages, those new apps create landing pages on Zapier's website that get indexed by Google for free. We acquire customers from search for free. So we're able to offer our service at a really low price point, you know, $20 a month starting. And the reason we're able to do that is because of our low cost of user acquisition. We found a sort of scalable channel early on. We built it early on. You know, integration automation is not a new space. It's been around since the 80s, the 90s. It's just like it costs 6 figures. Right. You had to hire an integrator. You had to sell to IT. You had to sell to engineering to do the implementation. And I think we figured out a way to actually like make the software just easy enough. We're able to deliver it at a price point, importantly, that could be self-serve adopted and brought into companies and teams. I think that's probably Zapier's like the actual innovation from the like last, you know, decade. And I think just more founders should think about like go-to-market and like customer acquisition from day one.
Totally.
I think there's a saying, first-time founders think about product, second-time founders think about distribution. You went straight to number two.
Hey.
I get to work with Mike, and I'm a multi-time founder, and I'll say the two biggest things I've learned from Mike has been, day one, think about distribution. He hammers me on that.
Wow.
And it's the exact right thing.
Right.
You've said to me, like, sometimes we've forgotten distribution in new product launches. Like, we've thought about distribution months ago. And the second thing Mike does that I think I'm going to do forever and torment people with is feedback in the morning, ship code at night. That's the velocity that we work. And that's the saying that we have. And I think literally it's talk to the customer, ship your product. That's it.
Oh, that's good.
And because you're constant, you just need to learn from your customer. What do they want? And then how do we get it built as fast as possible? And if we're not shipping code on a daily basis, we're screwed.
Right.
It's just math. Like, well, I think here is a team that ships daily gets 5x more context to the reality than ship, or 10x than a team that ships on a 2x sprint cycle.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry to give away your secrets, Mike.
Yeah.
Not a secret.
We're trying to help out other people. I think that that's a great note to end this on, and we really appreciate
Thanks, Mike, for inviting me.
And
thank you, Andy, for joining Zapier and working on Central with me.
Yeah, and Mike, everybody tries Central.
It has been a blast. I'm not going to lie about that.
I'm having fun too.
Yeah.
And so we'll end on this. Apparently now we are
product launch. New breaking news outlet.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. We this podcast now is breaking news. For everybody that's listening, wherever you are listening from, help us continue to grow. Help us get amazing guests like Mike. Like and subscribe and share our podcast. And thanks so much for your time, Mike. And also congratulations, Andy, on this amazing acquisition. You're still going to be on the podcast, even though that you sold your company. Don't worry, we're you're a founder of this, so we're not gonna kick you out just yet.
I have to sell Nana now too. So I mean, that,
yeah, you still are a founder. That's right. But kind of wanted to end it on that. And thanks everybody for listening.